This is episode 57. Welcome to the Sports Business Classroom audio experience. Today's episode is the audio from a recent Sports Business Classroom webinar in which former Phoenix Suns GM Ryan McDonough and capologist Eric Pincus discussed how NBA front office executives look at the trade deadline. For those of our listeners who want to someday work in an NBA front office, this is a must listen, and I'm sure you'll get a lot of value out of it. Without further ado, I bring you Ryan McDonough and Eric Pincus.
Well, I want to welcome everyone to the SBC Sports Business Classroom Program. Of course, we have the great Ryan McDonough, who is former general manager of the Phoenix Suns, gentleman who put the core together of Booker, Ayton, and Bridges. Also spent many years with the Boston Celtics. He's an Odyssey NBA insider, contributor for NBA TV and NBC Sports Boston. That's Ryan McDonough. I'm Eric Pincus of Bleacher Report, an instructor over at Sports Business Classroom. And today we're going to talk about the trade deadline. So, Ryan, welcome. Thanks for joining us. Are you ready? Just a quick hello. Are you ready for the events of the next week?
I think I am, Eric. You never know until it actually happens. For me personally, the second year in a row, I'll be covering it live for NBA TV, which is a lot of fun and a lot of action, a lot of excitement. It's honestly a lot less stressful than actually doing it on the team side, especially at the GM level. I'll be in Atlanta next week. We have a two-hour live show, 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern. So I'm looking forward to it. And as usual, as you know, Eric, that traditionally, historically, a lot of talk up until this week and through this week even, and then next week, usually starting right around Monday with the trade deadline being next Thursday, the 10th at 3 p.m. Eastern, starting next Monday morning, and then especially ramping up as the week goes on and we get closer to the deadline next week. The trade discussions get a lot more substantive. The offers get a lot better. And we have some potential deals generally, closer to the deadline on Wednesday and especially into Thursday.
Right. And that always interests me. And I know our students are always interested in how do you manage as a general manager a trade deadline? Because, the season basically starts roughly October 19th this year. So mid-October. You've done the work at the draft, you've done the work in free agency, and those are also the biggest trade times of the year as well. So you then have your roster and maybe you think you're going to be a great team. Maybe you know you won't be. Maybe you're delusional, which I think is probably a good amount of the populace is like, yeah, there's four or five teams that probably have a shot and everybody else thinks they do. But 10, 20 games, maybe they quickly realize, oh yeah, we miscalculated. But from a front office point of view, What is the calendar like? When is the trade deadline really on your radar?
I think for most teams, December 15th is the day that trade discussions become more substantive. And one of the things, Eric, is what you try to do here at Sports Business Classroom is educate. And the reason that December 15th is not a random day is most of the players, not all the players, but most of the players who signed free agent contracts the previous offseason become eligible on December 15th. So, and that's why for a team like Philadelphia, it was, I think, difficult early in the year. I imagine they would have done some potential deals in training camp or preseason or around the start of the regular season for Ben Simmons. But like you said, Eric, you hit the nail on the head. The famous line in the NBA is everybody's undefeated, right? Until opening night, everybody's undefeated. Nobody's lost a game. To paraphrase Mike Tyson, the fight only starts after you've gotten hit in the mouth. So, I think that date is good, December 15th, in terms of not only with the players who signed over the summer being trade eligible, but also you're a couple months into the season, a month and a half, 2 months into the season, you played a double digit number of games, 25, 30 games, whatever it is at that point. So you have a decent feel, but like anything in life, most of the things get done when they have to get done. And that's why there is a deadline. And so historically, from my experience, the offers prior to the deadline, starting around December 15th, are usually relatively one-sided in favor of the team that is making the offer, right? It's, if this other team would do this, we'd have to do it today. Right. And then what happens as we get closer to the deadline is the offers get more real. And that's why you see most of the deals take place the week of the trade deadline.
Right. And that's something that we really kind of, I don't know if preach is the right word, but you don't want to say no for the other team. That's something that we really teach our students when we're going through either our immersive class in Las Vegas or our GM Academy, our Draft Academy coming up. It's really about feeling out what other teams might do. And if you can get a yes on a ridiculous offer early on, you do it. But unfortunately, it's rare for, but we have seen some deals. We saw Reddish. That's probably the most substantial trade we've seen so far. We've seen a bunch of money deals, which I think are probably easier to work. We saw like a Bol Bol to Detroit, but that failed. And then Bol Bol went to Boston. And, you know, right. There was like Lakers made a deal that saved them some money. I guess you could argue Rondo was a basketball deal for the Cavs because of injury, but most of the deals are money deals. It gets a little bit, I would imagine, trickier. What's that process of digging in from your side, like from the team you represent, kind of figuring out what is that line? What is it that we want to achieve? And then getting that intel so that you can talk to other teams and also keep those cards kind of protected, so you're not giving away necessarily what your end point is. What's your drop dead? We'll do this. You don't start with that. How do you kind of protect that?
Yeah, good questions. And I think from an educational standpoint, you'll see more money deals next week, specifically involving the Oklahoma City Thunder on the receiving end, who are well under the salary cap, under the team salary floor. They're the only team in that position, but they're not the only team with a trade exception to be able to receive players. Orlando has a decent sized trade exception. So those are some of the technical things that guys like you and I will be looking at over the next week, Eric. Generally speaking, you start internally, right, with your own team. Who are we in terms of what is our roster makeup? What are our goals? How, especially in season, how are we progressing or not progressing toward those goals? And who or what is off limits? And I say who or what because it could be players, it could be picks, it could be a combination of players and picks. Who will we just not discuss? When I was in the Celtics front office and we had it rolling, it was, Paul Pierce, Kevin Garnett, Ray Allen, we're not trading. Rondo was kind of borderline a lot, sometimes in that category, sometimes not. And then, in Phoenix, it was, we were more draft and develop. It was more, okay, Devin Booker, our pick, things like that. We're not trading. Eventually, toward the end, we got DeAndre Ayton, Mikal Bridges. So it's different depending on where you are in a franchise timeline. And the challenging thing, Eric, as an executive, is it evolves. And I'll give you, I think, a great current example of that. I think where the Atlanta Hawks sit today and how they feel today is very different than how they felt 2 or 3 weeks ago, about their team. Sure. Team that went to the Eastern Conference Finals underachieved. Now I think they feel a lot better about it. I thought they'd be, back in the Eastern Conference Finals, but a young and up-and-coming team. So that's why it's so hard, and that's why you have to constantly stay in touch with other teams, because as much as you try to take the emotion out of it, the emotions do go up when you win and go down when you lose, and just trying to figure out, what do we have, what are other teams trying to do, and then constantly touching base with other teams to see if anything has changed on their end that would, recalibrate in terms of what you may offer them, or, give you a feel for how likely or unlikely there is a deal, is to be a deal with that other team.
Yeah. And that's a great point. I mean, the Hawks didn't have Hunter for a period of time, and that team absolutely desperately needs to have that kind of defensive presence on the wing, and especially with smaller guards like Trey and whatnot. And so, sometimes there is no solution via trade. Sometimes it's patience. And you see the battle from teams being too patient, not patient enough, teams panicking, all that, taking the emotion out of it. I think some teams are maybe better than others at it. I guess one more technical side, like how do you actually get once you've kind of agreed, you can't just shake hands with another GM and say, okay, we're done. Like, what's the actual process of okay, you're on the edge of a trade. How do you convert that into an actual deal?
Yeah, so obviously there are a number of people involved, and this is where something that we just did at GM Academy right after Christmas for the students to participate in that. We staggered the program, Eric, in terms of internal trade discussions, and then the students could start talking to other teams, and then the final piece of it on the last morning was they could execute the trades. And the reason we built GM Academy that way and the format that way is because that's what it's like with a team. It's not like you get on the phone with another GM GM. You say, great, we have a deal. Let's get the league office on the phone. There are a bunch of other people involved, obviously starting with the owner. You know, you need ownership approval for any deal. But on your own staff, you know, the coaching staff, especially the head coach, needs to be on board with what you're doing. The training and medical staff, the team doctor, you know, needs to, you know, see a medical, especially if there are any flags. You know, he'll want to go back and look over any x-rays, scans, notes from even going back to the pre-draft process. You want your, obviously, scouts, your evaluators involved, you know, going back to the pre-draft, even for a veteran player, and then your pro personnel guys, you know, you want to get their opinion, analytics. And then from an intel perspective, you know, and this is a little bit tricky, especially in season with your current players, but, you know, a lot of these guys, Eric, as you know, players change teams fairly often in the NBA today. They have relationships with these players. They know players. Some of them might have personal relationships, good or bad, or, you know, personal professional relationships, whatever it is. So you want to gain as much information as you can. And that's the key to make an educated decision. You know, obviously a lot can go right or wrong depending on, you know, performance or underperformance, injuries and whatnot, but you want to have, you know, all the information. And then the final step is, you know, once you've checked all those boxes internally, you call the other team and say, yes, if, you know, we're in, are you guys in? If they're in, you know, obviously you confirm it with all the teams involved, and then you reach out to the NBA, the league office, get them on the phone. And that's when the trade call happens. And so what you'll see next Thursday is a lot of verbal agreements, but a lot of trades won't be executed until after the 3 o'clock deadline, because there's always a surge of activity at the trade deadline. And it's not a deal until every party involved, at least two teams, or, you know, three or more teams, if it's a multi-team deal, they all have to agree on every single specific piece of the deal. And if anybody disagrees, especially after the deadline, Eric, the league says, look, you guys don't have a deal, and then you have to wait until next offseason.
Right, right. Well, I mean, I've heard, you know, horror stories from everything you just said, how many steps along the way there could be a breakdown, be it a breakdown internally where a front office is divided, a medical issue like Bol Bol was traded and then he wasn't, right? And then the ownership level, there are some owners who are very much, we're going to let the basketball department make those decisions. And maybe if it's about trading the superstar, they're more involved. And then there are some owners I've been told who are basically a presence I'm trying to be delicate, but an overarching presence, let's just say. And then you have to actually get the deal to work within the salary cap and within the rules, and you have to get that call into the league by the deadline. So it's not as easy. It's a lot easier in on Twitter, right? It's a lot easier for us to talk about stuff. And I think that's really kind of where I want to go is to more of like, I don't know if it's the more fun stuff, but I know that that's what people like, dig is where are we in this crazy world leading into the deadline about a week out. And so I want to just to our listeners, of course, we are going to check the Q&A section and we're going to try to get to as many of them as we can. And then we also do have a special guest who's supposed to pop in before we're done. So no promises in this crazy world if that doesn't happen, but we're expecting a visitor before we're done. And also, of course, in the chat, go ahead and drop some stuff. But if you want a question, and that's where we're going to look a little bit later. But I kind of wanted to get from you, Ryan, like, you know, what's your temperature? Like what teams do you have an eye on? And what do you see as the big name going or potentially going at this deadline?
Well, I think we start with two guys in the Eastern Conference, Ben Simmons in Philadelphia. I don't think it's, you know, any secret there that that relationship is really gotten damaged, in my opinion, to the point of no return. I don't think Ben Simmons will play another game in a 76ers uniform. So the question for me, Eric, becomes, do they trade him now over the next week or so or next offseason? I think one of those two things is certainly going to happen. I'm in the camp that they should at least try to trade him now. And I know Daryl Morey has publicly set the bar as far as we need a top 25 player. I personally do not think he's going to get a top 25 player because, frankly, I think there's some debate about whether Ben Simmons himself is a top 25 player. And then after, you know, the difficult performance last year in the playoffs and then everything that's happened since then, especially, I think it would be, frankly, shocking to me if another team gave up what a guy is widely considered a top 25 player for Ben Simmons. But in my opinion, I think Philly should move Simmons if the deal is good. Obviously, they love it to be great, but if it's good, Eric, because of Joel Embiid, primarily in the year he's having, He's on the short list of MVP candidates. They're near the top of the Eastern Conference again in Philadelphia. And I think when you have a special player like Embiid, who's a dominant two-way force, and you have some pretty good pieces around him, I think the main takeaway for me looking at Philly is I don't know if Ben Simmons necessarily needs to bring a top 25 player back in return. I think, a collection of really good players, and maybe we'll talk about the potential deal with Portland here in a minute, gives, a team like Philly the balance and depth it needs to compete for a championship. And the final point I'll make there is, I think if you look at the best teams, the two that have separated themselves from the pack so far in the league, Eric in Phoenix and Golden State, yes, their stars, Chris Paul, Devin Booker, Steph Curry, Draymond Green get a lot of attention as they should. But when I watch those teams play, I'm impressed by the lack of kind of weak links in the chain and the lack of holes. So I think in today's NBA, it's as wide open as it has been in years. And I think you can advance in the playoffs and give yourself a chance to compete for a championship without necessarily having multiple megastars. And, in the short term, we're seeing how multiple megastars are working or not working in Brooklyn. So I think Philly owes it to Embiid to at least try to get the best deal they can over the next week or so.
Yeah, it's a tough one. I guess the main theme, I think, that goes through a decision is the risk reward. And I think teams are generally risk adverse. But some teams, like if you're in that position, as you suggest, like with the Sixers, where you can argue that it's a wide open league and they have a chance to do something special, the risk for them would be what they get versus what they can get later, right? It's the opportunity cost. And then there's the risk of inaction, which is a risk. Doing nothing is a risk in and of itself. And so do you, quote, waste another year of Joel Embiid? And I'm not suggesting that's what that would be, but I've seen that written. I've seen that suggested. And maybe you can give him a better chance because you're trading a player who's not playing. So in theory, any additive player, any player who's not bad should add, right? And not take away. In theory, as long, we can debate that. There are some people who would say certain players are I guess, negative value and can take away. And Tyrese Maxey has been awfully good for them. So do you bring in a player who diminishes? Maybe you get less from Maxey, but do we have the graphic on? Why don't we dig into that you mentioned Portland. If we can get that graphic on the screen, what are your thoughts on this potential idea? What's your logic here?
Yeah, so one of the things we did, Eric, with the help of Anil Gogna and the terrific No Trade Clause staff, for anybody watching and listening to this webinar, go to notradeclause.com, check it out. It's run by Anil and former Sports Business Classroom students. They have every team in the league's salary cap sheet on there. They update it in real time. So when there are transactions, when Bol Bol or Cam Reddish, whoever gets traded, they update it very quickly. So it's a valuable resource from a fan perspective, from a media perspective, and from an educational perspective. So we work with Anil and the No Trade Clause group to put this, few slides together. This one, and again, we're not predicting this, Eric. What you and I are doing is saying this is a deal that potentially could happen. It's, obviously the discussions or the fact that Philadelphia and Portland have had some trade discussions for Ben Simmons is not a secret. I think that's known at this point. Both teams, seem to be posturing, negotiating a little bit through the media. But this was a deal that we came up with that I thought, would make some sense for both sides. Ben Simmons goes from Philadelphia to Portland. The 76ers get back CJ McCollum, who's obviously an elite shooter. I think that shooting floor spacing would help Joel Embiid. They get Anfernee Simons, who's been maybe the most improved player in the league this year. Eric, he's certainly on the short list of MIP candidates. And then Nasir Little is injured. So I think, that lessens the interest a little bit from Philly's perspective. It looks like Little will be out for the year, but he's young and talented. And as you see there on a rookie scale contract for the next couple of years at a good number. So you have him under team control for a couple of years, and then he's potentially a restricted free agent. This is a deal where, if I'm an executive in Philadelphia or in Portland, I look at this, I think about it. We'll see if they ultimately pull the trigger, but this was one that I thought made sense for both sides. Portland gets a quote unquote second star in Simmons, so I think would be terrific as a screener roller playing off of Damian Lillard. And then, the headliner in the package going back from Portland to Philly is McCollum, who I think would be a great fit, especially offensively with Joel Embiid, Tobias Harris, and Seth Curry. I think of the shooting that Philly would would have around Embiid in that setup. They also get a rising young star in Simmons, and then another guy who I thought played very well before his injury in Nasir Little.
Interesting, interesting. I mean, I could get it. I mean, I can understand what you're saying. I think the Simons emergence makes that more appealing. If Simons wasn't in there, I'd have more of an issue with it, because from talking to a lot of different teams, a lot of teams view CJ at this point, based on his age, his size, and his contract, still a very talented scorer, but maybe not an asset that they would give up anything for. Like, they would, it'd be more like helping Portland get out of the contract, as opposed to, and I think there are teams like, we could talk about the Pelicans. I recently wrote a Bleacher Report that I had heard that he was a possible target for the Pelicans, where there are teams that would view CJ as absolutely a positive asset. And if they can get that positive asset for a discount, you know, like a, because not everyone views him as that, maybe this is your opportunity to steal him. Adding in Simons there, at least, man, I mean, the young core with Maxey and Simons, that's some explosive youth that you could build around. But it is a commitment, and I think that's where the struggle is, I think, for Philadelphia. You're just swapping Simmons' money for CJ's, and I think what they've been trying to do to get a deal to work is getting out of Tobias's money, which is a difficult contract. It's a lot. I was actually on NBA TV when that happened, and they asked, like, you know, that summer, what were the most difficult contracts or the worst contracts? And I'm happy for, you know, Tobias, good for him, but it was an above market contract. And so I think they've been trying to get out of that money. So the question then is, are the Sixers committed to that kind of luxury tax for that long? Is that a core that can win? And I think, to your point, Ryan, like, you kind of have to consider it, because this is that opportunity right now. I mean, are you going to worry about money down the road, a year or two, three down the road? Or are you going to go for it? And I think that's kind of the debate.
It is the debate. And I think both sides, the Philadelphia 76ers and Ben Simmons and his group, have handled the situation poorly and damaged themselves, over the last 6 to 9 months. And I bring that up, Eric, because I think teams are having, you know, conversations I'm having around the league, teams are having some internal debates about Simmons in terms of just, do we want him and what is he going to be like here, right? If the team that he played for, who drafted a number one, who gave him a max contract, who had a chance to go to the Eastern Conference Finals, compete for a championship, if he quit on them, what is he going to be like when things don't go well here, which inevitably at some point they don't go perfectly forever. So I bring it up because I don't see any way that one team in particular is going to absorb Ben Simmons and Tobias Harris and all that money for those two players. And I don't know of a team that would be willing to be a third team that would take on Harris's money alone, just without incentives that, you know, I don't think any team, especially Portland, would want to, especially Philadelphia would want to pay. I think some teams would take maybe Harris's contract if they could get Tyrese Maxey with him, but Philadelphia is not going to trade Tyrese Maxey with. So it's this kind of, state of flux where, okay, you know, and this is one of the things that's important as an executive, is to set expectations and not waste anybody's time. If I were on the other end of the phone with Daryl Morey, say in Portland, who I think, you know, where I think Simmons would be a good fit, maybe in Sacramento is another team we have our eye on, potential Simmons trade partner. I think if you look at the history of superstars getting traded, Eric, especially in season, the teams generally prefer to trade that player to the other conference, right? Because you only see him twice a year. Right. In the playoffs, the only way you would play, if Philadelphia trades Ben Simmons to a Western Conference team like Portland or Sacramento or Dallas, for example, the only time you see him in the playoffs is if they meet in the finals, right? So that's generally the preference. So my guess is if he does get traded, it's to a Western Conference team. But I don't see any team absorbing, Simmons and Harris together, or even just Harris individually, unless there's some incentive or sweetener thrown to the team that takes Harris that I haven't come up with, or, at a level that I personally don't think Philadelphia will pay.
Right. And I think we had a visual on the Sacramento Kings and their books from No Trade Clause. And I think you kind of you hit the nail right on the head. And it's like, what Philadelphia wants might be to get out of that money, but that's easier said than done, because taking on Ben Simmons, who is a risk, and then Tobias, who's vast, he's expensive. There's a reason why he's a good player. I mean, the reason they wouldn't, it's not that they want to trade him, it's that the money's too much. So it's not that he's not a contributor, but when you're a team like Sacramento, and if you're going to take on that kind of money. Well, now you're thinking about, well, what do our books look like if we're paying De'Aaron Fox and we're paying Ben Simmons and we're paying Tobias Harris? And never mind that Philadelphia, to do that kind of deal, is going to want De'Aaron Fox because that's probably their best player. So now it's like, well, we can't take on that money and trade De'Aaron Fox, but we can't take on that money and keep De'Aaron Fox because now we're tied into all this money for, is that a core that Sacramento can say today? De'Aaron Fox, Tobias Harris, Ben Simmons. That is a team that will compete with the Warriors, compete with the Suns, compete with the whoever, the Jazz, whoever you want to put at the top of the West. I don't know that it is. And it's not a decision that you can make that you can reverse in a week. You know what I mean? That's like a multi-year commitment. And so I think that's kind of where they're stuck. And so it's kind of try to force a deal that no one wants to make with them or do something like you suggested and take CJ when they might prefer Dame as opposed to, I know Dame's hurt, but they might prefer Dame as a player, as a superstar. They might prefer James Harden, Bradley Beal. If Jaylen Brown, at this point, the Celtics are giving no indication, as far as I've been told, that Jaylen Brown is available. But that's today. And maybe the Sixers are thinking, CJ now, one of these gentlemen in the summer. And then you get back to your original point of, are you going to waste this opportunity with Embiid when, you know, the Bucks don't quite look as healthy. The East is open. You know, they feel like maybe we can beat Miami or whatever, Chicago. These teams are vulnerable. We can get it done. So difficult questions.
It is. And I'm glad you mentioned James Harden. I think we have a slide on that as well, Eric. One of the things that I think is fascinating with Harden, if our guys do have the Harden slide, if they could put it up, are the different contractual options that James has either with Brooklyn or with another team. You know, obviously, Brooklyn, especially recently, again, you talk about momentum in the NBA and how it you try not to let it impact your emotions. You know, Brooklyn Nets are on a road trip. I don't know if they're done or they're still going, but it's been a disaster. This West Coast swing, you know, the game in Phoenix last night in Sacramento, Kyrie can't play at home. I did some research last week, Eric, and realized that 7 of the Nets' last 8 games are in New York City. I think, you know, 6 at Barclays and then 1 at Madison Square Garden. They have 1 road game in Atlanta. So that means that if Kyrie Irving does not get vaccinated down the stretch when it matters most, and we're trying to, you know, gain continuity, they're currently 6th in the Eastern Conference. Certainly they thought they'd be 1st in the Eastern Conference or a lot better than 6th, you know, on the play-in line. You know, if nothing changes, Kyrie's not going to be able to play in 7 of the last Nets, eight Nets games. And Kevin Durant is injured, and we see how valuable he is. I mean, he was in the MVP mix, and the team is cratered without him. But Eric, you know, this cap and what teams can and can't do per the CBA and per the rules as well as anybody. Why don't you talk us through kind of some of the options with Harden, what you think, you know, James and his agent, you know, are looking at, and then what you think maybe is most likely if you had to call kind of where he ends up contractually and what team he is on when next season gets started.
Right. Well, he can opt in and he can resign. He can extend. There's a lot of pathways. And I think some of the question is, does he want to stay with the Nets? Does he, there's been some murmuring, and I wrote on this at Bleacher that there's some concern from some other executives that the Nets, rather the Sixers are doing what Daryl Morey did when he was with the Rockets, which it was perceived that he worked a deal with Chris Paul so that Chris was going into an option year, similar to what James is going into with the Clippers. And the Clippers had all this expectation that they'd negotiate and try to keep Chris Paul long-term. But apparently, at least from what my understanding is, he had already made up his mind, told them he's going to Houston. He'll either opt in and you could trade and you'll get something back, or I'll just go and sign there outright. And James is in a similar kind of boat. And there's some fear that maybe there is this level of tampering going on. I can't speak to that, but I can speak to that the fear exists from other executives. Whether it's true or not, I can't speak to that. But the complication is that the Sixers don't have cap room, so they can't just sign James Harden outright if that's where he wants to go. He's got a relationship with Daryl Morey. He probably, I believe, has some level of trust with him. You get a chance to play with Embiid and all the great things you said about the chances that the Sixers have. Maybe it's midseason. I don't think anyone thinks James Harden's being traded in the next week. But in the offseason, if he can apply that kind of pressure, he might be willing to sacrifice a little bit of money. And if you notice, there are some options as far as doing a sign-in trade or maybe doing a normal trade and then waiting a little bit longer to get extended. And maybe even if it meant giving up $60, $70 million, maybe that's the path that he would take if it's the best path for him to get where he wants. And so sometimes you want to maximize your how much money I think everyone would like to make the most money that they can make in most transactions, right? And this is not a small amount of money. But he may not have a path to getting one of those larger numbers logistically. So it might be a sacrifice of $70 million, but maybe he doesn't want to stay in Brooklyn. Maybe he does. Maybe he spends the rest of his career there. So I can't speak to that, but we do know there's a decision that needs to be made. It's a decision that James has to make, that the Nets have to make. And if the Sixers are a part of this equation, they have to make, but they have to make that decision now. The Sixers do, just based on this potential. Because if Simmons is the main guy that goes out for James Harden in a trade, be it to the Nets or via a multi-team trade where the Nets feel like if they don't trade Harden, then they will just lose him for nothing, then maybe there's something that could be done. It, just that potential is, I would imagine, what the Sixers are mulling over. They've likely done their intel, and they probably have a sense of what James Harden wants. Whether it's legal or not, they probably have a sense of that. And so, I there is no answer. Is CJ McCollum now better than James Harden in a matter of months after the season? And is that one opportunity, this year's chance with Embiid, better making that choice for CJ, even if you want Harden? Or is it better to wait? I don't have an answer. I think what Daryl or the Sixers have communicated to other teams and to the media is that they're patient. That's the message that I've gotten. That's the message that you read when you see the different media outlets, when you talk to other teams. But it doesn't mean it's true. It doesn't mean that in a week's time that we don't see some crazy deal or that CJ ends up in Philadelphia.
And the other challenge, sounds obvious, Eric, from an executive standpoint, but how does Brooklyn's playoff performance impact James Harden's mindset, right? If Kevin Durant gets healthy and Kyrie Irving finds a way to play, hopefully in all the games, but at least in enough games for them to go on and win the championship, which they do have the most talented top three in the league, then James Harden can say, you know what? I'm happy here now. Things have changed. You know, I was down when we were losing, when Kyrie was not playing because he was unvaccinated at home, when Kevin Durant was injured, but we just won the 2022 NBA championship. Yeah, I'm going to sign, this 5-year, $270 million deal. And then, if you're in Philadelphia, an option you thought you may have had, is gone. It just dries up and by far your best option. One interesting teaching point here, Eric, per the CBA is, looking at the different options, I don't want people to assume they know what Harden's going to do based on what he does with the option, right? And what I mean by that is if he opts out, I don't want people to necessarily assume that he's leaving. Or if he opts in, and I think this one is more important, if he opts in for next year's player option for the 2022-23 season, that he is staying. And the most interesting, one on the sheet that Anil Gogna and the folks at No Trade Clause put together is number three. To me, the number three option on this sheet, James Harden can opt in, Eric. He can wait. Basically, what Harden would do is he would opt in, so he'd have 1 year left on his contract. He'd be an expiring contract next season in 2022-2023. But then he would go to the Nets ownership and front office, say, look, I'm not going to re-sign here long-term, and I want to be a Philadelphia 76er. I'm going to end up in Philly, one way or another. So you guys can wait, and I'll walk for nothing as a free agent in 2023, or I would prefer that you guys do a sign and trade with Philly, because the interesting one here again is number three, and this hasn't been, I think, widely discussed, Eric, at least from the stories I've seen and articles I've read, is that Harden could opt in, get traded to Philadelphia or one of the other 28 teams, and then wait 6 months and then sign the 5-year, $270 million max extension after the 6-month waiting period. That is something to keep an eye on. And you have to imagine that Harden and the folks in his camp, especially his agents, are very aware of that possibility.
Oh, yeah. And be sure that Daryl Morey is very well aware of this possibility as well. And I guess the argument that I say for most free agent, this free agent summer is very dry when it comes to money. Very few teams have money, but your point is valid. And this is what I wrote about in Bleacher Report, is that one more year with the team, it's like, yeah, okay, do the Nets just want him to expire and you get nothing back from him? That's a real issue. So while he can't necessarily force any and all things this summer, because the only team that's close to his max would be Detroit, and maybe Detroit's not a player for James Harden. But still, okay, fine. He can't force that this year, but just the short nature of the time left, what do the Nets want to do? So there's a lot. And I want to move on from Harden, the Sixers. And more importantly, I want to move on from Simmons, because I think everybody's wanted to move on from Simmons for many, 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 many months. But, and we have a lot of Q&A to get to, but I just wanted, are there any other teams that, or any other big names that we haven't hit on that you think we need to touch on before we get to the Q&A?
Well, two teams I have my eye on, one in the Eastern Conference is the Indiana Pacers, and then in the West, the Sacramento Kings. I think those teams are both likely to do a deal or multiple deals. Eric, I think those are the two most underachieving teams in the league relative to their internal expectations, right? So, and that is a real thing in front office. You go into the season, I think Sacramento had high hopes of snapping what will now be the longest playoff drought in NBA history if they don't make the playoffs. Remarkably, given how weak the Western Conference is in the middle and bottom of the conference, they still have a chance to make the play in. So I think that'll absolutely be a factor that they've underperformed. They do have a lot of talent, especially in the backcourt with some of the guys we discussed, De'Aaron Fox, Tyrese Halliburton, Davion Mitchell, the rookie they just drafted out of Baylor, Buddy Hield. But the roster is unbalanced. They need more help on the wing in particular. So I'm looking at Sacramento as, potentially sending out one or multiple of those guards. One interesting thing there, Eric, that I want to get your take on quickly, because I know we have other things, is how do you think Sacramento views De'Aaron Fox on a max contract versus Tyrese Halliburton on a rookie scale contract versus which one would they be more likely to put in a big deal for, say, Ben Simmons or another, potential star player coming back in return to Sacramento?
Right. Well, we've seen there was a report maybe from Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN that Sacramento's out and they're done negotiating for Simmons. My experience is they're out, but that's also they're out unless Philadelphia backs off their demands. And then if it wasn't as expensive, maybe they're back in. But I think that's really kind of the question where the buzz is Halliburton is the one guy that they won't trade. Now the buzz is, well, Halliburton and Fox are the two guys they won't trade. I think probably they would keep Halliburton because that money is so much better. You have him for another couple of years at team control beyond that, right? So he has the team option part of the rookie scale in 2023-24. So basically it's this year and two more. And then after that, he'll be a restricted free agent. So they can extend him. They have the power to he can't leave unless he leaves the NBA itself. He can't leave their team outright. He can't go to another team without their say in that. Whereas in the case of De'Aaron, he isn't quite as good as he was last year. That might be team composition. It might be changes in coaching. It might be a variety of things. And it could be things like, the rule changes and the ball change. And a lot, we've seen a lot of quote stars need to adjust to it. And he hasn't been bad, but is he a 30 something million dollar player a year? They may feel like it's time to make a change. But what they're communicating is, if at least from what I've been told, is that if they're going to make that kind of change, you're paying through the you're giving up a ton to get someone like De'Aaron Fox. And I don't think they're really even engaging in anything specifically with Halliburton. And I with the Kings, they've got so many pieces. Barnes, Bagley. I think Bagley is the one guy that they quote need to move, in the sense that if they don't, he leaves and they're not going to resign him, I don't believe. And then if he leaves and you get nothing, that's the guy that you drafted ahead of Luka Doncic and Trae Young. And I know that it wasn't this leadership group who made that decision, but at the same time, you've got to get value for him. Barnes is still under contract, buddy. Like, the deadline isn't quite as extreme for them, but I think the Kings, you look at them and you're like, you guys have to make some decision. You have to change up something. So what kind of targets do you think? Is there anyone, any of the bigger names you think that they have a shot at outside of Simmons?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, another team we'll talk about here in a minute, maybe Indiana is another team looking to make some moves. I don't know if Sacramento would match Detroit's price for Jeremy Grant, but he's a you know, one of the bigger names on the market. He's never been an all-star, but was a key piece of Denver going to the Western Conference Finals a few years ago. And that really hurt the Nuggets, you know, losing Grant and in large part precipitated the trade last year for Aaron Gordon, you know, bringing Gordon in to replace, and, you know, in a lot of ways to replace Jeremy Grant. So, you know, but I think short of Simmons, I personally don't think Bradley Beal will be traded. You know, I don't think James Harden will be traded. And that's why I'm more focused on, you know, Sacramento, Indiana, things like that. One teaching point, Eric, because we try to, you know, combine obviously news and our analysis with teaching. You see TPEs down on the bottom of this screen. For those who are listening and watching who don't know, that's just short for traded player exception. And that allows teams who are over the salary cap, which is just about every team other than maybe the Oklahoma City Thunder, teams who are over the salary cap can absorb a player or multiple players into those exceptions, staying under the number. So you see with here with Indiana, they have traded player exceptions of 7.3 million, 4 million, 2.3 million. They can use one or multiple ones of those exceptions to absorb players back. And but yeah, with them, I think they're in a difficult spot. Eric, the Pacers specifically, and I want to get your take on it because it's always more difficult to trade an injured player than a healthy player. And I think teams now with Miles Turner injured, with TJ Warren, who played great in the Orlando bubble but hasn't played a whole lot since then, currently injured. He hasn't played a game this year, and he's also in the last year of his deal. You know, teams are hesitant to pay a premium. Sometimes they're hesitant to give up really anything of value to take on an injured player, especially if they have concerns about the player's long-term health. So I think the Pacers, you know, with their underperformance, 13th in the Eastern Conference, and with a number of injured players on the roster, I think, you know, they'll want to make a deal, but I think it's hard because some of the value for their current players is not what it was at one time, even in the recent past.
Yep. I mean, it's a quandary. I think in the case of Turner, I actually had him as the most likely to be traded, and that dropped immediately when he had the stress fracture, which I think it was a stress reaction, which is basically like a precursor to a stress fracture, but it's scary. And he's probably okay, but he's not guaranteed okay. And when we talked about risk is such a big deal, like giving up assets, making a big deal. And the Pacers, they don't have to make a trade, right? Like they still have Turner next year. They still have the draft free agency. They don't have to do it right now. And so because they're in a position of strength because they don't have to make a move. But like we talked about the Kings briefly and Bagley, like they're kind of in, like they kind of have to do something. Otherwise they lose that value, right? Whereas they don't lose that value with Turner. So, but I like a team like the Charlotte Hornets. And I want to bring up like our GM Academy students who took on the teams. They took on the Charlotte Hornets. They took on the Indiana Pacers, made some deals. And this was one of them. And this is what they came up with in our madness of a trade deadline, which was a lot of fun. But they traded Miles Turner and again, pre-injury, and Justin Holiday to the Hornets for Plumlee, Oubre, Bouknight, and a first-round pick. And so I don't know personally right now, looking at the year that Oubre's had, I think that they probably would keep Oubre and probably try to do PJ Washington and there's actually, I'd heard some, I know that Gordon Hayward has some love for Indiana and would like to, he played in Butler. So there is some love there. So I do think there's some potential before the deadline. And I had also heard that Dallas was very interested originally in Turner, but then that injury kind of, because Rick Carlisle coached a lot of those guys over in Dallas. So there's a familiarity and a comfort level where maybe he values a Dorian Finney-Smith more than another team does. Not that he doesn't have good value, but that his particular, you know, point of view. But this is what our students came up with, which I think is reasonably close to, if Turner was healthy, the idea of what might happen. And what's your thought on this? And are they close?
Well, yeah, this is in range of a deal that could happen. I think their thought process was Miles Turner going to Charlotte would give LaMelo Ball someone offensively who can space the floor a little. I wouldn't say Turner's an elite shooter, but he can pick and pop to make a three. But more importantly, I think Charlotte, you know, good young offensive team, play up tempo, but struggle some defensively, especially with rim protection. Plumlee's, you know, a skilled big. He's a good passer, but he's not a vertical player, you know, above the rim shot blocker. And Turner's one of the best shot blockers in the league. So I think that was the thought of the students who put it together. You give LaMelo Ball, you know, a minor lob threat offensively in Miles Turner, but somebody could also space and maybe as a trail big, you know, if they play up tempo, Eric, you know, that's become pretty common in the NBA to have the shooting five man trail to play and spot up for threes. Turner could fill that role, but where they could really use him in Charlotte when he's healthy is defensively protecting the rim, especially as LaMelo and some of the other young Hornets on the perimeter gain experience. So that was their thought process. And that's one of the things we love doing at GM Academy is splitting the students into teams and having them execute deals. And a lot of them were good. They're realistic. And, you know, look, they weren't forced to make trades with anybody. So it was only a deal, right, if two or more teams agreed upon it. And this is one that the students representing the Hornets and the students representing the Pacers thought was fair value. And again, I think within range of something that you could actually see in the NBA, assuming all players were fully healthy.
For sure. I think, like I said, I'd take out Oubre, but other than that, I think there's some makings there. I do want to go to a Q&A, and this kind of hits on where we wanted to go with the Pistons anyway. So let me answer this live. This is Derek Morris. He's asking, from the Detroit Pistons front office perspective, how would you successfully negotiate a trade involving player like Jeremy Grant, who has defined a specific role, primary offensive option, and contract extension that he desires if traded. Additionally, as a team who may be receiving a player like Grant, how do you address these requests? So basically, Derek's asking, you know, what is a viable Grant trade look like, and how do you kind of get to that? Given, I guess, I know some of the issues are is that there's been some news that he does, at least it's been leaked, that he expects to be extended wherever his next destination is. And I don't believe he's, you know, Derek mentions, he views himself as kind of a primary scorer. He's not somebody who wants to go back necessarily to that Denver model where he was the support guy who scored a little bit 3-and-D, but isn't the primary dude.
Yeah, I'll be honest, Derek, from a team perspective, that's a little bit of a red flag if a player is more concerned about what is my role. Not the money, that's understood, but in terms of, you know, my offensive role, touches, points, I thought he was in a really good role in Denver, at least in terms of team performance with them going to the Western Conference Finals, and he chose to go to one of the worst teams in the NBA in Detroit. So from the Pistons front office, I think they feel, you know, probably a little conflicted that Jeremy Grant is one of the few players, one of the few good players who has chosen Detroit recently as a free agent. So I think, you know, that's a feather in their cap, and he has played well there. He's been, you know, borderline all-star a year ago. But at the same time, he is under contract and they're under no legal obligation to send him to wherever he wants. First and foremost, to trade him. But then if they do trade him to a preferred list of teams. So and then on the receiving end, the other 29 teams looking at Grant, if you're going to give up significant value for him, which, you know, will be the ask from Detroit, I think you're going to want to know that, yeah, you have him long term, and at least the parameters of an extension, you know, are in place, because last thing you'd want is a guy approaches the end of his contract to give up, you know, good value, young players, draft picks, core veterans, and then have the guy leave as soon as his deal's over, or not even get to the end of his deal and request a trade. So all of that factors into it. I think Grant is available. I think Detroit would even lean further into their rebuild, but they're setting a high bar. But the important thing for me here, Eric, relative to Grant, although it's bigger than Grant, is that Grant is the type of player who most teams want, because he is a versatile wing. And that's one of the things, as you and I go through the league and talk to executives and coaches, that's what they want, versatile wing. Utah could use a versatile wing. A number of teams, Sacramento could use a versatile wing. Portland, you know, a number of teams could use versatile wing. So I think that puts a premium on guys like Grant who are in the marketplace, that, you know, they're more appealing to just about anybody than, say, a traditional center or a small point guard that, you know, some teams just, based on the way they play, wouldn't want. You know, every team, at least theoretically, would have some level of interest in a guy like Jeremy Grant.
Yeah, but absolutely. And gentlemen, can we pull up the slide on what our SBC students did? The grant trade, I believe, to here it is. There it is. So we did have a grant trade executed in our most recent virtual class, our GM Academy. And Jeremy Grant went to from Detroit to New Orleans in a deal that included Jackson Hayes, Alexander Walker, a first round pick, which was actually from the Lakers, and Satoransky. So this is just an idea. I'd heard from my intel that the Pelicans may be looking more for a guard necessarily than they do have that wing already kind of in Brandon Ingram. So I think they're looking a little bit more for a guard. And I think CJ McCollum kind of fits that, where if they could buy low, if the price right now on CJ is a little bit low, they may be able to get something done there. So just wanted to illustrate what one of our teams was able to pull off from Grant. Again, we can debate the actual trade. It's very hard to predict an exact trade, but we can try. And to that end, Ryan, I want to shotgun through a lot of the questions, and we're probably going to do it quick style, not spend too much time on any necessarily one question. So we'll start with this one from Mikhail Ratz, I believe. What's your perspective on Chicago Bulls trading Patrick Williams? Would you go for it to win now, or rather keep him for sustainability?
Mikhail Ratz is one of our students in GM Academy from Moscow. So thanks for staying up, Mikhail. Good to see you again. So another injured player, Patrick Williams, you know, has been injured. Was a somewhat of a surprise pick by Arturis Karnišovas and Mark Eversley in the Bulls front office. But to their credit, he certainly showed, at least as a rookie, why he was worthy of being the fourth pick in the draft. I think there are some scenarios in which they would trade him. However, I don't think the player they would trade him for is available in this year's trade market, if that makes sense. I mean, they're a good team. I think, they're ahead of at least my expectations in terms of the Bulls, how well DeMar DeRozan, who's, an all-star in the Eastern Conference, Zach LaVine, maybe one as well, Nikola Vucevic, good third option. And then, in the backcourt with Lonzo Ball and Alex Caruso, who are injured at the moment, they've really helped defensively. So I preface it that way, Eric, because I think the only way a team like Chicago, who's ahead of schedule and who, probably internally feels like when they get healthy in their backcourt and they get Williams back, they'll be even better. I think they trade Patrick Williams for a superstar. Bradley Beal and James Harden aren't available, in my opinion. They're also not great fits in Chicago because of DeRozan and LaVine. So, I think I wouldn't spend too much time on the Patrick Williams rumors, because I don't know who the player is who's likely to get traded over the next week or so. That Chicago could get that they would put Williams in play for, and also the other team would be willing to pull the trigger to give up a talented veteran for a young player like Williams.
All right, excellent. And I'll just say that Arturis's first action, for the most part, as a GM, was to draft Patrick Williams. And you find that there's a belief, people tend to believe in the guys that they pick. Maybe teams believe a little, not in any way criticizing Williams. I'm saying they believe in their guy maybe more than they should. Williams is actually a really nice prospect, happens to be hurt. And as you mentioned, they're kind of ahead of schedule. So I'd heard that he's off limits. They might make some moves around the margins. They have some ability to make some moves, but I don't think Patrick Williams is going to be in play at all. I'll take this next question because it's from Mohamed Awo. What are the challenges for a team such as the Lakers this year, and that they are limited in moves that they are capable of making on the trade market? Basically, what's the challenge for a team like the Lakers? Main thing is that they, I think each team has a limited number of resources. Some teams have a wealthier, deeper pocket in an owner who's willing to pay more and go deeper into the tax. But the deeper you go into the tax, the more penalizing it is. It changes, it makes it harder to make trades. You can't do sign-in trades to acquire a player. You have limited exceptions. It gets harder and harder to make those kind of moves. And so you have to be really careful if you invest all of those resources into a finite number of players, two or three players. And that's what the Lakers chose to do. They put almost all of their resources into three players. And the only player who's not at a max or near a max or at a minimum is Talen Horton-Tucker. Outside of Kendrick Nunn is injured and he's on a $5 million contract. But the only salary they have of note is Talen Horton-Tucker. And we're not going to get into it now, but I just wrote on Bleacher Report how the Lakers erred when they signed him when he was a rookie, that has led to him getting paid $10 million when he should be earning $1.8 million this year, just based on the ability they could have signed him to a 3-year deal, and how that led to him getting a bigger deal. And then the deal they signed him to is so short because he has a player option that if you trade for Talen Horton-Tucker now and he blows up, which is what you would want, right? You would want him to be successful. Well, you only get him for next year, and then he'll be an unrestricted free agent. And now you've got to deal with Rich Paul and Clutch Sports, who are notoriously difficult negotiators, which is a credit to them. That's not a criticism. And so the value there is very limited. And then let me see here, because we're running really low on time. There's so many questions. I'm just like really impressed on the quality of them. I might answer some of them via text, but we are going to have to wind it down in just a moment. Real quick, what's the likelihood? This is from Ronald Salgado. What's the likelihood the Raptors trade Dragic and or Boucher? I'm just throwing that out there.
Well, they're going to try to trade Dragic. He's obviously away from the team. He's in Miami working out at the moment. The reason he hasn't been traded yet is because the trade deadline's next week and they want to preserve Dragic, either to be traded individually or part of a bigger package. What I'm fairly certain is going to happen, Eric, I think this is one of the best bets in the NBA over the next week or two, is if Dragic is not traded by 3 p.m. next Thursday, he'll get bought out by Toronto and then sign probably with the contender of his choice. We've heard Dallas is interested. So, I think he's going to be, they're going to try to trade him. And if they can't trade him, they'll buy him out. But obviously from a team perspective, you'd always prefer a trade rather than the buyout. A buyout, you save just a little bit of cash. In a trade, you get value. So Toronto will put him in play. And, again, Dallas makes some sense. Eric hit the nail on the head with New Orleans could use a guard. I'd look at those two teams in particular in the Western Conference could use backcourt help and playmaking as potential homes for Dragic over the next week or so.
All right, I'll throw in that Nicholas Brack is asking about Eric Gordon and what team would benefit from acquiring him. I've heard the Lakers have interest. I don't know if they can get there, but it would probably cost them a first. Rob Pelinka has a relationship with Eric Gordon, used to represent him. And also the Cavaliers are looking to add in a combo guard, be it or a wing, a secondary ball handler, perhaps Caris LeVert or Eric Gordon. I feel like I wish I could answer all of these questions. Unfortunately, we are really low on time. Ryan, do you have any thoughts that you want to share with our students or our listeners, our viewers?
Yeah, well, first, I wanted to thank you guys for participating. And then I also want to let you know, what we have coming up in March, Draft Academy. We're planning on doing it the last few days of March. So for those who participate in GM Academy, which was 3 days, and it's an immersive experience where we put you inside a front office and teach you about everything there is to know in the NBA as far as a crash course in the collective bargaining agreement, drafting, scouting, trading, analytics, sports science. We're going to do something somewhat similar, but a little bit different in late March. Eric, as you know, you participated in GM Academy right after Christmas in late December. That was more trade focused because on this webinar, we've talked about the trade window from December 15th until the trade deadline next week on February 10th. Well, we're going to meet in March 29th through 31st is the Tuesday through Thursday before the Final Four. So you'll be able to watch the players for their entire college season into the conference tournaments and through the first two rounds of the NCAA tournament. And this one is going to be more draft focused and offseason focused. It'll be primarily about the draft, but also to some extent about how the draft impacts free agency, because obviously we're talking about building a team and taking students inside a front office and how it's really done. So it's going to be online. It's all virtual. You can do it from anywhere. And we've gotten great feedback from the online classes we've done before. So sign up. I think you can pre-register either now or maybe starting next week for Draft Academy. And I see the godfather of the SBC and the CBA, Larry Kuhn, joining us in the chat. And also, be aware, and I'm sure Larry will talk about it here, but we're going to be back on schedule for the immersive experience in Las Vegas, which is Larry's show. So I will turn it over to him. And welcome back, Larry. Always great to see you.
Thanks. What's up, guys?
What's going on, Larry? Good to see you.
So I hear there's a trade deadline coming up or something like that. Cool. Hey, speaking of things that are coming up, would you like the segue? So there are plenty of things coming up with SBC. It looks like Ryan just covered a lot of them, so I probably don't have much to say, or I'll just be redundant. But SBC, we're going to be coming out with more stuff in 2022, coming out with stuff more frequently. As Ryan just said, our new virtual event, our next one, Draft Academy, similar to GM Academy, we're going to focus on the draft. Ryan just talked about that. March 29th to 31st, you see it there. We will send out announcements when registration opens. We're expecting that to open next week. Also watch sportsbusinessclassroom.com. That's where you'll be able to register. We're going to start doing these webinars every month. So the next one, mark your calendars, is going to be on March the 3rd. So we're going to do it on scouting the NC2A tournament. Ryan, Ryan's gone, but I'm kind of shocked. That, yes. Apparently they like play basketball in college or something. And there's some sort of tournament. Who knew? So we will be doing a virtual webinar on scouting the NCAA tournament. Again, watch for the announcement on that and the signups. We're going to start having more written content. Eric's going to be producing some stuff. We're going to be doing some more with our No Trade Clause group. And I see Anil is here on this chat. The big event, as Ryan just mentioned, will be SBC Immersive in Las Vegas. Once Summer League is announced, we will announce and we will open up registration. If Summer League is there, we're going to be there. And by every indication, Summer League is going to be there. So I think we're going to be back to our regular schedule in July for Summer League and for Sports Business Classroom. You've heard about it. If you need to know more, feel free to hit us up, because if you're interested in this, it's an event you do not want to miss. We will, again, announce and open registration as soon as we know for sure about Summer League. Also, CBA Mastery with moi is, hey, look at that. There's a graphic there. So if you're interested in really getting to know the CBA, I mean, we're talking at the front office professional agent level, a guy who knows it well. CBA Mastery is an on-demand video course. You can take it, listen to me lecture you. You have exercises, you have quizzes, you have all sorts of things to really improve your knowledge of the CBA. This is my most in-depth offering. This is more than I teach directly to teams. It's more than I teach at Sports Business Classroom. This is the best way to learn the CBA if you're interested in building that sort of knowledge. And by God, who isn't? So you should be on our mailing list, and by registering for these virtual events, you should be on our early interest list for SBC. Watch sportsbusinessclassroom.com and clear your calendar, because it's going to be a great year.
If I didn't get to your question in the Q&A, I typed it in as best I could. If we didn't get to it at all, you can find us on Twitter. I'm at Eric Pincus, E-R-I-C-P-I-N-C-U-S. And you could also find me on the Sports Business Classroom website, where I'll be putting some content together. So thank you for attending.
Webinars such as these will be taking place each and every month, so if you're interested in learning more about the business of basketball, head on over to sportsbusinessclassroom.com to see the upcoming webinar and event schedule.